Welcome to Periodical Radio, the program about magazines and journals. I'm your host, Steve Black, librarian at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, and author of the book Serials and Libraries, Issues and Practices. Here on Periodical Radio, I often ask my guests whether they think online versions of their periodicals will replace the printed issues. The topic of today's show, Everywhere Magazine, puts a whole new twist on that question. 8020 Publishing has created a printed travel magazine from content submitted by readers at their website, everywheremag.com. In the words of Paul Cloutier, CEO of 8020 Publishing, many people believe the web is going to kill off print magazines, but we think just the opposite. By combining the vitality and depth of the internet with the tactile, inspirational quality of print, we want to make magazines more relevant than ever before. In my mind, they've hit on a great idea. The eclectic mix of reader-written travel stories and photography are very interesting, and the magazine is appealing and well-designed. To discuss the philosophy behind the magazine and what is making it work, my guest is editor Todd Lappin. Todd, welcome to Periodical Radio. First of all, can you explain for our listeners who may not be familiar with Everywhere the innovative way the magazine is produced?
Sure. Everywhere is produced in a really unusual way in the sense that it is almost entirely created by the people who read it. So we have an online community at everywheremag.com, and it's both a travel destination website and an opportunity for people to submit material that we can actually use in the magazine. So in the course of submitting travel photos about a place or writing a caption about a place, or even if you'd like submitting an article about a place, you're both creating a travel website where people can go to find out, you know, what's fun to do if you want to go on vacation, and also you're submitting material which we then use to create a print magazine. So the best of the material that's submitted on the website by our community ends up in a pretty glossy print magazine that we then let people subscribe to, just like a normal magazine.
What was the original philosophy behind turning Web 2.0 content into a professionally produced magazine?
Basically, it turns out that, you know, a lot of the things that everyone heard 10 years ago about print is dead, the future of dead tree media, and so on and so forth, just turns out not to be right. It's true that newspapers are having a difficult time, but and the magazine business as a whole is having a difficult time, largely because of some issues having to do with sort of where the advertising market is going. But demand for magazines is pretty solid. And one thing that's really clear is that as the web sort of siphons off a lot of the audience that has to do with data, you know, things which are just about numbers and statistics, that kind of information belongs on the web. But magazines do really well, even now, when they really focus on experience. In other words, when magazines do what magazines do best, which is present beautiful pictures and beautiful layouts and really sort of inspire people to get out and do something. So that was the thinking, is that if you combine the best of both worlds, allow the web to be about data, in other words, let the website be a place for us where people can submit lots of gory detail about any particular travel destination, but then we can take the best of that and turn it into print. Print travel magazine isn't really about data. In other words, you're not really picking up a travel magazine to find out what the phone number of a hotel is. What you really want is a beautiful picture to make you realize that that's probably a place you want to find out more about. So we use the print magazine to be all about inspiration, and we let our website be about data. And that's sort of how the division of labor works between the two.
What are the advantages of using reader submissions instead of having paid travel writers?
There's so many advantages. It's sort of just the list goes on and on. The most obvious of those is just the fact that reader submissions tend to have a lot more authenticity than travel writers. I mean, the simple fact is that, you know, travel writing is a sort of a racket in a way. The writers themselves don't really pay for their experience. They're just sort of supposedly bringing some sort of expertise to the thing, which is supposed to be helpful. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I think a lot of people really would rather hear from somebody who was doing it on their dime and who is just genuinely excited about something. There's just so much more inspiration out there than any travel writer or any editor sitting behind a desk can possibly capture. And this is just a great way for surprising, interesting, and authentic experiences to end up in print.
As an editor, what do you have to do to turn that very eclectic mix of submissions into a coherent issue?
That's a good question. It's sort of guidelines that we use in our own heads. We don't sort of ever really say them explicitly in the magazine, but when you look at the current crop of travel magazines, most of them out there, it's pretty obvious that they tend to bifurcate along two lines, and I wrote about this in our first issue. It seems like you're either going on a trip to Tuscany, in other words, you're looking for some sort of pretty high-end vacation, or you're going backpacking in Alaska for 3 months. In other words, you're an outdoorsy type. And the more we thought about it, that just seems kind of ridiculous. That distinction between high and low is pretty arbitrary, and the fact of the matter is most of the people we know, regardless of their income or their purchasing power, tend to do a little of both in the course of a typical travel year. The wealthy people might do it a little more often, but really, at the end of the day, they don't travel all that differently. So that's kind of what we're looking for. We're looking for a range of experiences that capture the gamut of the kind of travel people do, which is to say that some people in the course of a single vacation may spend 3 days, you know, backpacking. I just have some friends who just came back from a trip like this. They spent 3 days on a backpacking trip in northern Vietnam, and then when they got back to Hanoi, they spent 3 or 4 days in a four-star hotel to sort of unwind after that trip. And that's the kind of diversity and range that we're looking for.
Now, how does the reader rating of the stories and photographs work on the website?
That's working. We're just getting that part of things going. But basically, the way it works is it's not a democracy. It's in other words, just because something gets favored a lot doesn't mean it ends up in the magazine. What the system does is it basically we use a combination of factors, including sort of explicit votes, views, links, a combination of things that are all sort of fed into an algorithm to generate a measure that we just sort of generically call hotness, which is to say things that people are interested in through both active and passive measures of community interest. And what that does is it just allows the stuff that is the hottest or the most interesting to float to the top in the sea of all the submissions we're getting. And from the stuff that flows to the top, I as an editor then go in and curate that and turn it into print magazine layouts.
How much editing in terms of like copy editing and changing the text is necessary, or is that all over the place?
That's a really, really good question. I've worked at a bunch of magazines over the years. I worked at Wired for 5 years. I worked at Business 2.0, Time Inc.'s Business 2.0 for 5 years. And in both of those places, you know, quite often you would end up really going in and doing some pretty substantial rewriting of the text. Here at Everywhere, my philosophy is that we need to take a pretty light hand, mainly because, again, authenticity is the most important thing here, and the sort of the opportunity for people to let their own voices shine is really, I think, what gives the magazine so much of its energy. What we tend to do is we will often trim things down. People do tend to write a little bit long, which is actually a good thing. We will go through and we do our own basic fact-checking, in other words, make sure that references are correct and so on and so forth. And you know, tighten things up a little bit, add our own headlines, add our own subheads, and then again, just sort of really package the thing. And also, we do, of course, send them out to a copy editor, so they do get copy edited. So what we're trying to do is just take the submissions we get, make them as professional as we can, without really going in and doing very substantial revisions or editing. If we have a question, we will go back to the member of the community who wrote the article and ask them, you know, just a little bit here and there. In other words, this one part didn't make sense. What did you eat? Where was the name of the hotel where you stayed? Some basic questions like that. But we don't do what you would do at a traditional magazine, which is, you know, often revise a piece wholesale and sort of say to the writer, can you just basically do another draft for us? We don't really do that.
So you're really striving to give the authors their own voice?
Yeah, we
really
want
as opposed to having one voice for the whole magazine.
Exactly. We're not at all about having one voice for the entire magazine, just because the whole point of the exercise is to really allow the enthusiasm of the community to rise to the surface, and we want that to be first and foremost. That's the reason why you would read everywhere as opposed to any other travel magazine, even independent of the fact of how it's made. In other words, you know, I think Everywhere needs to work as a magazine on its own, even if you never knew the fact that it's created by its readers. It just needs to be the kind of thing that if you were to pick it up on the newsstand alongside a bunch of other travel magazines, you would just instantly say, wow, this magazine is different.
I'd like to momentarily go back to the peer commentary aspect of it before moving on to some of the things about the magazine itself. Some scholarly journals have experimented with peer review commentary, but the problem has been very few articles actually get any comments. In your view, what's the critical mass of folks that you need to make commentary, to make peer commentary work, to be a valuable resource? of
That's
information?
That's a good question. Everywhere is just getting started as a community, so I would not claim that we've got it all completely figured out. The community itself just launched in late November, so it hasn't been in existence for all that long. But from some of the other magazines that this company does, this company also does JPEG Magazine, which is a photography magazine, and a lot of the general things we see about web community, it is a bit different than scholarly community. There's a lot of scholarly communities. There's a lot of incentives which really come into play in a situation like this that do influence it. So obviously, reputational capital is really important, and of course, that would come into play in a scholarly environment, in the sense that if you're the kind of person who consistently says smart things, people just start to know your name, and you can build a brand for yourself just through your participation. But there are other things that come into play here. This is an opportunity for a lot of people who would not normally get published to get published. There's a huge incentive for a lot of our contributors to essentially be able to say, look, Mom, I'm in a magazine. We see the impact of that all over the place, both in terms of the kind of participation we get online and actually the kind of newsstand sales we see, where, you know, we found that with JPEG at least, Everywhere again is just getting started, but with JPEG, the number of copies that fly off the newsstand is pretty dramatic, given industry, relative to industry norms, largely because we believe it's due to the viral effect of, look, I'm in a magazine, and a lot of the contributors' friends and family go pick up a copy. The upside is that this is basically, there's a little bit of an American Idol component to a lot of this, which I don't know if it would be the same in a scholarly context. There's an openness to it, an accessibility to it, and the opportunity to have your moment in the spotlight. And I think that's really compelling for a lot of people.
I'm hearing you say that Look, Mom, I'm in a magazine still carries more value than Look, Mom, I'm on a website.
Absolutely. And for all the reasons that we alluded to earlier, a website is nice and a website is important, but there's a sort of a gravitas and a sort of a depth of the experience in a magazine in the context of a colored, you know, high color, high gloss print page, which just doesn't translate to the web. Again, this is sort of what makes the experience of a magazine very different than the experience of a website. And it affects the reader experience, impacts the contributor experience, and it's almost, I would say, subliminal in the terms of the way we respond to the two mediums differently.
The graphic design of Everywhere is very appealing, at least in my eye it was. How did you and your team decide on the look you want for the magazine?
There's a bunch of things that have going on. I mean, obviously there's the basic identity of the magazine, the logo type itself, which I realize is a podcast, so people can't see it. But the logo type it sort of looks a little bit like an airline route map with all the, we call them jet lines, shooting off from the Y and Everywhere. That was meant to be obviously a metaphor for travel and also a metaphor for the web of people who contribute to the magazine. And it just sort of is one of those images that instantly kind of evokes the feeling of travel and exoticism and going somewhere. That was the basic elements of the identity. Beyond that, we were just looking for something that looked very contemporary, very simple, but very sophisticated. And we also wanted to allow the photos to really shine. In other words, we really want this to be a photo-rich magazine because we get amazing photos from our contributors. It's just absolutely incredible. And we want them to be given as much play as possible. Lastly, you know, the general format of the pieces tends to be relatively short form. We don't do a whole lot of long-form narrative. A long piece for us tends to be about 1,200 words, and there's a lot of shorter pieces. There's a bunch of reasons for that, structurally, some of which has to do with, on the contributor side, I think it's a lot less intimidating for people if they don't feel like they have to be Rudyard Kipling and write this amazing opus. You can just sort of jot off something which is almost a quick thought, and actually that's enough to get published. We have a whole section of the magazine called Postcards, for example, which is nothing more than user-submitted photos with about a paragraph of text describing what was going on at the moment when the photograph was taken. And again, the metaphor obviously is a print postcard, the kind of thing you would write on the back of a picture if you were sending it from somewhere else. This is the same idea, except it's your photo and it's a digital photo, but you know, tell us, what would you have written if this were an actual postcard? That's an example of how we're using short-form writing, very rich pictures, to tell stories in a different kind of way.
Do you have to get the original photo files from the readers? Or I wouldn't think that the files that are uploaded would be of high enough resolution to go into the magazine.
They are. There is a. This is a little bit debate. They're having some internal debate about this, but we have a requirement. We won't accept any photo that's less than 2,000 pixels wide. So we have a minimum size requirement. A minimum size requirement to upload a photo to the website, for that very reason, that we just want things that we always know we can use them as a two-page spread. And you can do that with 2,000. Even 2,000 is a little small for a two-page spread, but beyond a two-page spread, it's good for almost everything else that you might want to do. So that it gives us a lot of flexibility to run photos big, to run them small, because almost every photo we get is of sufficient quality. I'm sorry. And again, there's some debate about whether we should also allow lower resolution photos, because while it's true we do a lot of big pictures, we're really into photographs, we also nevertheless do a fair number of photos which aren't all that big, like every magazine does. You use inset photos and you do collages and so on and so forth, and you don't need very high resolution photos for that. And so that would maybe lower the bar for entry to some photographers. But anyway, that's an ongoing debate that we're having. But for the moment, it's working great, and we're getting amazing, amazing contributions. And my favorite example is we just sent the second issue of Everywhere off to the printer. And the cover of the second issue came from a reader. It's a genuine reader submission. It was just sitting there on our website that somebody had given us this fantastic picture taken. It sort of has a journalistic quality to it, taken on the roof of the Standard Hotel by the pool in Los Angeles. And it's this great scene that captures the sort of sociology of the rooftop pool in downtown Los Angeles and sort of how bizarre that is. But it came through the transom from a reader, actually a traveler who was visiting Los Angeles from France, and was good to go. All we really did was a little bit of color correction, and there it is, the cover of our next issue.
Todd, many magazines are launched on a wing and a prayer, and most new magazines fail, but you guys aren't working from your kitchen table. You're obviously playing in the pro league from day one. Can you tell us about the experience your team is bringing to Everywhere and talk a little bit about what it takes to launch a successful magazine?
Sure. Being well capitalized helps quite a bit. 8020 Publishing, the company that publishes Everywhere, is working backed by Miner Ventures, which is a venture capital firm created by Halsey Miner, who was originally the founder of CNET Networks. So we start out, it's almost more like a technology startup than a traditional magazine insofar as the funding model is concerned. Which is nice because, again, it does mean that you can start right from the gate and not having to do the kitchen table edition. And I know people who have done the kitchen table version and have succeeded at it, and I have phenomenal respect for them. But it is nice to be able to come out with a magazine that from day one looks pretty good. So that's it. But it's actually a very small company. In other words, even though the company is doing two magazines and has a website, the entire team is about 13 people. And that's basically executive leadership, editorial team, designers, and software engineers, which is not all that many people. And that's pretty much a goal, in other words, to really keep certainly the editorial overhead as low as possible and to always try and be as lean as possible and to use technology to drive cost out of the cost of making a magazine as much as possible, because certainly one thing that we believe very strongly is that the business model for magazines is changing and has to change. Alluding to some of the comments I said earlier, the sort of the old billboard model of magazine advertising, if you put it there, hopefully somebody will notice, is clearly not working as advertisers have the opportunity to use more targeted media, and they get used to doing that more and more through things like Google and online. So I think we're moving more to a circulation-driven model where you're asking the people who subscribe to the magazine to actually pay the cost of the magazine. In other words, make circulation a profitable enterprise as opposed to something that's subsidized by advertisers to sort of demonstrate demand for the product. And so while on the one hand the business model on the publishing side looks like that, on the editorial side the goal is to keep the overall cost structure as lean as possible so that, again, you can make circulation profitable and you can make the magazines profitable on relatively low circulation numbers on their own basis. In other words, independent of having massive amounts of advertising, just the circulation itself and the enthusiasm that the magazines generate makes them the kinds of things that people want, and there's enough people who want them that they become profitable.
8020 Publishing now publishes that photography magazine, JPEG, that you mentioned a few times, as well as Everywhere. What other topic areas do you see as ripe for the reader-contributed Web 2.0 to magazine publishing model?
Well, we debate this all the time. I don't think there's a huge hurry to launch any more magazines. Right now we've got two, and sort of they're both startups, and they're off to a good start. But we really want to make sure that these work before we continue expanding. But with that having been said, there is obviously the goal is to essentially build a platform that we can use to launch more and more magazines, and to really have that down. So it's just a matter of turning the key and getting the design going. You can repeat the process we've created here. There are some obvious categories. I mean, the things, there's a bunch of sort of base level questions we sort of ask when considering a category, along the lines of, is this a community of people who are extremely enthusiastic about the topic? Is this a community of people who self-document? In other words, are they already in one form or another on the web commenting on the topic and taking photographs of the topic and so on and so forth? And again, if you look at most of the enthusiast categories, they would fit the bill. So,
What would be some examples?
Yeah, some examples of that would be skateboarding. It's an obvious example of people who are already doing, or almost any kind of sport like that, snowboarding, skiing, surfing. These people already do a great job of documenting their sport, and there's a lot of opportunity there. Automotive. There's a lot of car magazines, but there aren't any user-created car magazines, but there's an awful lot of people who take pictures of their cars and are passionate about their cars and write about cars. That's an opportunity. Fashion is another example. Street fashion especially, obviously. Less runway fashion and more kind of everyday street fashion would be an opportunity. Those are just a couple of examples that sort of, again, all of them are united by strong community people who are self-documenting. Then it would just be a matter of trying to encourage them to participate in a community where they would actually have their documentation translated into print.
Back to Everywhere itself. Thanks. That was very interesting. For Everywhere, do you worry much about the competition? One might think the travel magazine market is pretty saturated.
I alluded to this earlier, but it's entirely possible that I'm wrong and that this is just pure hubris, but I always remain open to that. But I wrote about this in our editor's letter, and it really, there was no exaggeration to it. When 8020 first approached me to edit the magazine, I did what you do. You head down to your local newsstand, and you just sort of sit there and stare at the category, and you stroke your chin and say, what does this tell me? And it was just really, really, really dramatic to me that there was no travel magazine that did what this magazine should do and can quite naturally do, which is to say, convey a more authentic experience and convey a more diverse experience than the category does right now. I don't frankly know anybody really who gets many of the current crop of travel magazines, and it's not because they don't travel and it's not because they're not interested in the subject. It's just because the magazines don't really speak to them. And as an editor, I just always love these opportunities when you sit there and you look at the marketplace and you just see this, glaring gap between the different publications. And we know that these sorts of things can work. And, some of the magazines that we look to for inspiration, frankly, I'm friends with most of the people who run these magazines, so there is a little bit of a brain trust that I can tap in thinking about this. Or, for example, Ready Made Magazine and what they did, what Shoshana Berger did when she took on essentially the shelter category and Martha Stewart, gave it a more authentic voice, a younger voice, and a more diverse voice. What Make Magazine, the folks up at O'Reilly Publishing, have done with the notion of the hobbyist and sort of what they did to sort of magazines like Popular Mechanics, which, of course, in the 50s and 60s was a kind of thing where, Dad would go out into his garage with his Popular Mechanics and go build a boat trailer. Make Magazine has sort of rediscovered that enthusiasm, but with an electronic and digital edge. Again, really found a niche for itself in a category that has become increasingly sort of abstracted from the actual bit about getting your hands dirty and doing things. You can see these sort of success stories happening, and they're all very analogous in the sense that they are seeing an opportunity in the editorial marketplace and really going after a group of people who are not just interested in being passive consumers of the magazines, but they actively want to be participants in it. They want to do the things that the magazine is helping them do, teaching them how to do, and they want to take their own interests and channel them back into the magazine to say, hey, look what I did. The travel category seems really, really ripe for that.
Todd, is there anything else about Everywhere you'd like to tell us before we conclude?
Well, it's just it's an ongoing experiment, we've, as I said, the online community is relatively new, and the kind of submissions we're getting are completely encouraging. We shipped the second issue largely with user submitted content, and that was fantastic. It was also very encouraging, but we're just very excited to see where it's going to go. The job here is to be sort of more of an orchestrator than to really lead the community, and we're excited to see where people are going to take us, what kinds of places they want to go, what kind of places they're going to discover, and the opportunity to put those stories in print is pretty exciting.
Well, Todd, I was very impressed with the first issue, and I wish you great success.
Thank you so much.
And thank you very much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
To subscribe to Everywhere, or to read and rate the stories and photographs submitted to Everywhere, go to everywheremag.com. Subscriptions are $14.99 for 6 issues per year. Reading online is free. Free registration is required to rate stories and photos. Thank you for listening to Periodical Radio. I'm your host, Steve Black.